Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Just want to pass on a little bit of breaking news. I called Cody Snodgrass last night, a CIA whistleblower and insider who's been doing a lot of really superb shows on various radio programs across the internet. I want to thank the listener that turned me on to him. Unfortunately, Cody was in a serious car accident. I believe both cars were totaled. He was in the hospital. I think he's out of the hospital now, so I don't know when he's going to be able to start doing interviews again, but I encourage you to look him up on YouTube. I think I've probably listened to 10 or 12 of his programs. Some of them I've listened to more than once. He's a very interesting guy. I also apologize if you hear loud snoring in the background. My dog is close by. He's been doing a lot of snoring lately, so I can't seem to encourage him to leave the room. I kind of have arbitrarily just decided to do a show today on what I was reading in the Might of Thoughts, not necessarily that it's the most important thing I've come across, but I think it may be good to take the program a little bit in this direction. We'll see how it goes for a while. In my particular edition of The Might of Thoughts on page 88, I'm just going to start reading here a little bit and then discuss this a little bit. It says, on their own, certain radiations or electrical and electromagnetic influences are able to cause emotional impulsations, resulting then in thereby affect a human being not knowing at all from which cause his or her emotions arise. So, and I've had a few experiences like that in my life where something triggered me and I don't know exactly what it was. It says here, on their own, certain radiations or electrical or electromagnetic influences are able to cause emotional impulsations. I've also seen cases and times where I think I overreacted and I wasn't sure why, what triggered me or what caused that. So I thought it would be good to talk a little bit about the difference between emotions and feelings, because the feelings arise from the thoughts, and that's good and normal. So if you have good thoughts, you're going to have good feelings, but emotions are different. Emotions arise so quickly that they are sometimes not noticeable before we detect them. They arise so quickly. Emotions cannot be steered. They are reflexive. They are spontaneous manifestations. While feelings emerge slowly and are formed by the world of thoughts. And I remember reading in here, Billy says not to squelch or to oppose your feelings, just to let them go where they're going to grow. So we have this whole set of cognitive processing that's going on, both subconsciously, unconsciously, and consciously. And there are things that can affect these processes: alcoholism, desires, gender, state of health, the fitness of your body and your consciousness. Let me continue here. And naturally, in such a case, there is also no cognitive process, no mental pre-appraisal, because such emotional reactions appear completely reflexively and spontaneously. So emotions just, they erupt, and they're hard to control. Thus also, no internal or external stimuli arise in reference to which the human being concerned could locate and judge the origin of the emotion. So it's sometimes very difficult even to evaluate where these emotions originated from. At best, a human being, if he or she is practiced and knowledgeable about it, is able to locate certain centers of the brain from which the emotions arise. However, this requires healthy practical experience over many long years and actual knowledge of how the consciousness, emotions, thoughts, and feelings, as well as the psyche, actually function. Merely studying matters of psychology, psychiatry, and psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, and philosophy, and so forth, is in no wise sufficient because the doctrines of these schools of thought still run too much along wrong lines and lose themselves in erroneous assumptions. So remember, the big picture here is that this book teaches us to think in a neutral, positive way. Characteristics of neutral, positive thoughts are: I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm confident, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful, I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm, I'm satisfied, I'm in harmony, I have hope. These ideas and notions are related to neutral positive thinking. And then once you have neutral positive thinking, then you can claim these things. You can say, I am the master of my own destiny. I'm the forger of my own fortune. I create my own good luck. Then we learn to steer our thoughts. I steer, I nurture, I strengthen my own good thoughts. And therefore, I have inner freedom. So, and it's very interesting that whenever I start to talk about the might of thoughts, I get a lot of movement from pets coming into the house. We shouldn't probably, but we do allow the pets to come into the house. I have 6 cats. It's a long story. Boy, I'm really digressing here. I have a doggy door, and the cats do come in the doggy door at times. They sleep in the garage. So I just got a visit. Wilson the Rottweiler just got a visit from Miss Deke, who's one of the cats. So she wanted to hear about the difference between emotions and feelings, evidently. Emotions are spontaneous reflexive reactions of certain centers in the brain, which not only exercise their function in the human being, but also with animals. As I see right here, one of my animals is expressing her emotion. Thus, also with animals, emotions become evident, which are based on some factors, as are those of the human being. However, animals are not able to contemplate their emotions and the reasons they appear, nor are they able to correspondingly create feelings from them. Boy, oh boy. I don't think you can hear that, but she is just, what's wrong, girl? You know you're interrupting the show here, little Mystique. Go back out and play, girl. I apologize for that. It's been a weird couple of days here. To digress a little bit, when I called Cody, he had he had put this message on his answering machine, and I'm like, whoa, floored by that. It's things are heating up, as you know, in the world situation. We've got the tremendous fires burning in the West. We just finished with all the crazy hurricanes. The government in the United States is literally at war with itself. So maybe it's a good time to be studying emotions and feelings. Let me continue here. Animals are only able to develop their own feelings through instinct and drive. And I guess animals only have a limited, if any, consciousness, which is something that doesn't quite click with me, because I know that, for example, certain kinds of monkeys and apes can be taught sign language. And for years, they can have conversations with their quote-unquote owners, if you want to call them that. So there's much to be learned here. you know, about our thoughts and what our thoughts are and what it really means even to be conscious. I'm not sure we totally understand that either. Perceptions, thinking, and recognition, factors through which cognition is indeed embodied, not only come into operationally consciously, rather also unconsciously. So we have a whole bunch of stuff that's going on unconsciously. And this, Billy has an article on anger and rage. And I think a lot of times when we do have expressions of anger and rage, it's as much with things that are unconscious as it is with things that are conscious. So we may, anger is triggered and there's an issue and that we have a conscious issue that we can articulate, but there's probably 10 things behind or underneath that rage, that anger, that's unconscious or pre-conscious. It's something that's moving into the consciousness. Perceptions, thinking, recognition, factors through which cognition is indeed embodied, do not only come into operation consciously, but unconsciously. And since cognitive processing also happens unconsciously, there are therefore also unconscious causal conditions for emotions, thoughts, and feelings. So, and this is where this gets extremely profound, is that unconsciously we have thoughts and feelings and emotions, which I find just amazing. The fact that our brain has a whole set of operations that we're not even aware of. We have feelings we're not aware of. We have also, we have feelings which are called pre-conscious. In other words, that come from the unconscious or the subconscious up to the conscious mind. And these thoughts and feelings that are unconscious, they appear subliminally and they can positively or negatively influence your psyche. And I like to revisit definitions sometimes because I think we take for granted sometimes too much that we understand something. And we don't clarify it as much as we should. See, the psyche is referred to as that half material block and factor, which within the material body of a life form, in this case, the human being, regulates and looks after the material consciousness-based feelings and the material consciousness-based thoughts. So the psyche looks after and controls and administers the material consciousness. So we have a material consciousness, which is who you are this lifetime, and a spiritual consciousness, which is the sum total of all your lifetimes together. And your innermost counselor, your innermost creational personality, comes from the spiritual consciousness, comes from your spirit form, and it is your counselor, it is your guide. It is, in some ways, the real you. The real you is being formed through all these lifetimes, through millions of years of experiences. And who you are at this lifetime is just one of those manifestations. The goal here is to keep your material consciousness in neutral balance, because you can become what's called askertit, which means negatively imbalanced, or you can be positively imbalanced. But you want to be in this equalized harmony. Now, in contrast to the psyche, which is the aspect of our being that controls the material consciousness, we have something called the Gemüt, which controls the spiritual consciousness. It looks after your spirit consciousness-based thoughts, which is so good about the Gemut, is it cannot be controlled or influenced by negative powers. It's always neutral positive, the Gemut. And it always exhibits this harmony. Remember, one of the creational natural laws is the law of harmony. And the Gemut always stays in harmony. It always stays neutral, positive, balanced. And this is your true self. It is your authentic person, your spiritual consciousness, which is such a... How did Semyase... Some Semyase said, the spirit is the wonder of all wonders. It is the creative aspect. It records all your thoughts, all your feelings. It never sleeps during your deepest sleep. It never dies. And it will tell you if your thoughts and feelings are right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. It's the bearer of the creative realm. That's the words she used. Now, this Gemut is the part of your spiritual consciousness which controls the thoughts and feelings associated with that spiritual consciousness. And it supplies something called harmonious swinging waves from the realm of cosmic electromagnetic life energy. Always, it's producing these harmonious swinging waves continually. And this is a contrast to your psyche, which produces maybe unequalized, like rage and anger, can come from your material consciousness. In the Gemut, which is interesting, it has no direct connection with the physical body. So there's aspects of ourself which, I guess the only word that comes to mind off the top of my head is rather complicated. I think the effective truth of it is all simple, but when you delve into it, it gets rather complicated in that sense. So what can affect our thinking and feeling, all kinds of vices and motivations and medicines and your sexuality and your addictions, your hopes, can affect your thoughts and your feelings? And these different states of mind can trigger unconscious things. For example, you can be... you can have a sense of being sexually satisfied or unsatisfied, and there are different states which trigger unconscious cognitive perceptions or even emotions. Medications, alcohol can trigger unconscious perceptions, unconscious thinking, unconscious recognition. I think music is an expression of these tremendous unconscious and subconscious powers that are going on. Okay, let me read a little section here. Whereby the affected human being also cannot explain why he or she had the corresponding kind of reaction. And I was talking about that early because there are unconscious and subconscious things going on. The result of that is that especially pronounced unconscious cogitators, for example, neurotics and such persons have especially and increasingly negative feelings. And under certain circumstances, also the same kind of emotions, which are called forth entirely through unconscious perceptions, as well as unconscious thinking and recognizing. This is one of the things that surprised me the most of as I've been going through this material over the years, is the aspect of this that is unconscious. And I wonder if really much of the response of people to this information is unconscious, because we recognize the value of this. It's really a form of higher thinking and higher teaching. And our conscious mind takes a long time to really wrap itself around these things. It says here, if a human being possesses some abilities, then he or she can consciously use them, from which a psychical and consciousness-based well-being can grow from him or her. And one of the things I'm noticing is, as I get a better handle on the might of thoughts, and it involves repetition, where I have to repeat and repeat these concepts to me, that I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm the master of my own destiny, I'm the forger of my own fortune, I create my own good luck, I steer my thoughts, I nurture my thoughts, I strengthen my good thoughts, my consciousness is like a garden filled with flourishing plants. I do not allow my thoughts to drift. I remove negative thoughts. Those who allow themselves to think negatively will soon allow themselves to be controlled by them. What I think I make real, what I think about myself, I become. So anyway, what's worked with me is the repetition of these things. And that's when you can change your thoughts from a negative case to something that is positive. And the power of our thoughts is just beyond our comprehension at this point. So I want to continue here down this line, and then we'll break off and I'll talk about some other things. It says here that emotions are completely independent of thoughts and feelings, and rather appear as uncontrollable, lightning-fast reaction to some sort of factors caused by the body or the environment. So the actions like anger and rage can sometimes be caused by the body. Let me continue. But that does not mean that the emotions could not be combated and resolved, because this possibility, in fact, exists when the emotions are recognized as such and are dismantled in order to then consciously, volitionally neutralize them. That is to say, dissolve them and eliminate them. In contrast to the emotions, which are not dependent on thoughts, now this is amazing, rather solely on some sort of indigenous or environmentally caused reactions and so forth. Feelings arise solely through the thought processes which precede them. Feelings, remember, grow out of the thoughts in a conscious or an unconscious form. Consequently, naturally, also conscious or unconscious feelings can arise, which then correspondingly form the psyche according to their negative or positive nature. This is amazing. This is really, really, I don't even know the right word here for describing this material. I want to talk quickly, let me flow down through some things about anger and rage. With anger and rage, emotions are allowed to run free. Rage can be met with love and feeling for others. Now, this is one of the way Billy says to neutralize this. This is pretty challenging. This is a completely different thing. Sometimes rage is defined as a violent or an uncontrollable anger. The non-use of the intellect can lead to rage. Now, one of the things that I've got in my notes here is also how anger harms the liver. And this anger and rage can cause cancer. Okay, they trigger the what are called hepatocytes in the liver cells, are effective in such a way that they degenerate and cancer cells are built. So when you have this inner anger and rage, you're killing your own cells and you're degenerating these cells to the point where the cancers start to grow. And there is a word that sometimes define those that are angry. Intransigence means refusing to compromise or agree, inflexibility, which is associated with anger. So anger is very dangerous to your own health. So try to neutralize your anger with love or with feeling for others, which is requires a tremendous change in your point of view. Emotions are reactions. They are able to create thoughts where feelings occur because of thoughts. Emotions arise spontaneously and they're hard to bring under control. So what's the link between the unconscious and emotions? Unconscious very much affects us, our unconscious. The unconscious mind consists of processes that occur automatically, and they're not available to introspection. They affect our motivations. When something is automatic, it means it's working by itself with little or no direct human control. So I think one of the things we have to do is get a little introspection where we start to examine or observe our own mental and emotional processes. One of the things that happens is the flattening of the feelings. And the flattening of the feelings is the beginning stage of depression. So when your thoughts go out of neutral positive balance and the feelings become negative as a result of the thoughts being out of balance, then the depression can come in. A depression is a low mood. It can affect your thoughts, behaviors. It's a flattening of the feelings. So you'll notice the highs go away. So be careful and when you start to have the depression. And you can almost always link a depression to not following, striving hard enough. That's one of the things I would argue, that there's a direct link whenever depression, or almost, maybe not every case, but when the depression comes, go back and look at your life in terms of striving. Because there are times in our life where we have to work harder than we ever thought we even could. And we have to go through things in terms of striving that are above and beyond what we ever thought we would have to do. And if you don't step up to the plate to do that, what will happen is all sorts of depressions, flattening of the feelings, because your spirit form is impulsing you. It's giving you evolutive impulses. If you do not follow those evolutive impulses, you can get into all sorts of depression. Let me continue here. The unconscious can be comparatively understood as something like a secretary or a clerical assistant. So you're coming before the consciousness in the chain of information processing is the unconscious. So it's the unconscious is autonomous. It takes in, it sorts incoming perceptions and impulses, and it passes those on. it's interesting that science has not come to agree exactly what a thought is. Now, that would be something for a whole other area of research. Strong thoughts are imprinted with feelings for the human beings who live with them, a profound and existential significance, because such structures of thought are seldom extremely are. In other words, when we have certain structures of thoughts and feelings, they become extremely stubborn. They stick around. It's really interesting the way Billy uses the term structure for thoughts. A structure is an arrangement of organization of interrelated elements in a material object. So how does the unconscious mind affect us? When one of the Askett's contact report, Askett's Explanations Part 1, it describes how Reinhold Schmidt was deceived by the Giza intelligences. However, he ultimately deceived himself as well. In line 202, it states, thereby such an Earth human will become an unconscious deceiver of himself and of all those who believe in his explanations. Askett also said George Adamski was lying about his experiences. But he was saying, Askett was saying George Adamski was carrying out deceitful manipulations quite consciously. Now, I have a guest who thinks George Adamski was the real deal, for sure. I try to be neutral about these things. I put the information out there. I tell people what the Meyer case says, and I let them decide. I can tell you this much on my own experience, that the Meyer case has continued over the years to provide me with useful information, where these other cases, whether they're true or not, I don't know, but they haven't provided me with much useful information. So I don't do much more with them. Anyway, let me continue. Reinhold Schmidt was deceived by the Giza intelligences, and he also deceived himself. So Reinhold Schmidt was probably one of these tools of the Giza intelligences, kind of like the guy named Eric. He was called Eric Janison while he lived. I'm not remembering his actual name, but he worked with the Thule Society, and he played a role in throwing Hitler off. He sent Hitler off the deep end and really screwed up the whole world, pretty much more with World War II. And the Giza intelligences influenced Hitler through the Thule Society, through this guy who at that time called himself Eric Janison, which wasn't his real name. For some reason, I'm not remembering his real name. But so the whole World War II, that horrible 60 million people that were killed was in part because of these Giza intelligences that had been here for many, many thousands of years. They lived in these old cubicle constructions, 73,000 years old. The Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old. The old cubicle constructions below them are 73,000 years old. And it was an extraterrestrial group that influenced Hitler. I mean, Hitler was actually a very positive person. He would have been very helpful for mankind. The Plejaren actually impulsed him to be a great leader here on the Earth. But these negative Giza intelligences, who were also extraterrestrial humans, used telenotic impulses, used the Thule Society to negatively influence Earth humans. My dog is picking up with his snoring. I got another cat in here. I think I have an animal issue. Okay. So the unconscious mind can affect the human body. One of the effects we see is what's called the stigmata. And this is where religious delusions are transferred into the unconscious mind. So these people appear with wounds all over their body and they're bleeding. The stigmata, it's called. This is also true in cases of alleged alien abductions. Figure Bulletin 7 talks about that. That a lot of these marks on people are produced by their unconscious mind. That's how powerful our thoughts are. Figure Bulletin 7 states, such individuals produce these wounds unconsciously through their own mental powers. And this is the power of people's unconscious. It's extremely powerful. Your unconscious can do things that we wouldn't think are possible. There's a great TV documentary also called The Stigmata. And the stigmata, again, the most shocking case of the stigmata is a woman called Teresa Neumann, who lived in the village of Konnersreuth in Bavaria, Germany. And you can actually see blood flowing from this woman's eyes as she sits there in her bed in the trance. This is a true, incredible power of the human mind. Yeah. Teresa would bleed on most Fridays. Her name was Teresa Neumann. She is said to have survived for years, not only on wafers, but, I mean, she was really affected by religious delusions. Let me see if I have a clip on the stigmata. I don't know if I do, but it'd be great if I did. I think it'd be a good time for a clip. No, darn it. I thought I did. I probably have in the past talked. I'll have to go back through and look. But the whole thing with the stigmata is absolutely amazing. So there's so much power in our thoughts and feelings. So the unconscious or the conscious mind can be responsible for the creation of the feelings. One of the biggest problems that we face is that problem-causing thoughts function automatically, and we tend to narrow our frame of reference and focus on certain thoughts over and over and over again. So we need to learn to break that cycle of automatic thoughts. This is one of the big problems. Problem-causing thoughts, they operate automatically, and they can throw our psyche into a turmoil. And it's automatic thoughts which are crucial, because through them, the feelings are disturbed and also the psyche. So we need to do an internal check to see that our feelings are getting disturbed. And if our feelings are getting disturbed, that means we've entered into a kind of automatic thinking, of thinking that is not good for the psyche. It's usually always negative. And each time these repeating thoughts move through the mind, they generate more disturbing feelings. So this loop goes on. The negative thought is repeated. Another disturbing feeling is generated. And sometimes feelings also generate thoughts. So we have to break this pattern of these uncontrolled automatic thoughts. This can be done through meditation, focusing on something else, listening to music, going out into nature. And these thoughts become habitual. And we repeat them over and over again. One of the things that I've done in the past 6 months or a year since I've been studying this material very intensively is I've broken the habit of these negative thoughts. Boy, you get freedom. Oh, it's so much better. And I've learned to repeat certain phrases in this book which generate the positive thoughts again. These negative thoughts that repeat over and over again, they create a distortion of reality that can lead to depression. And we start also to think about these problems unconsciously. And we all have problems in our life that can generate this kind of automatic, unconscious thinking. We need to examine which conscious or unconscious attitudes are causing this behavior. And this is challenging because the conscious or unconscious ideas are not always immediately recognized. Sometimes, and there can be cases where we're legitimately being treated unfairly. The key here, and if that occurs, the key here is not to increase the suffering of the unfair treatment. Because if you rotate negative thoughts, you will increase the suffering beyond what it otherwise would be. It can be helpful to even have create a diary of thoughts and feelings. Some of these unconscious thoughts can move to the conscious mind. So one of the things we're doing here with this material is we're developing a systematic kind of self-observation. Now there's a guy named James Allen, and he wrote a book called As the Man Thinketh. And it's very similar to Billy's book, Might of the Thought. Let me read one thing he said here. It says, the aphorism, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, not only embraces the whole of a man's being, but is so comprehensive as to reach out to every cognition and circumstance of life. A man is literally what he thinks, his character being the complete sum of all his thoughts. So, suffering grows in the human being as the product of the might of thoughts and as the product of our mental disharmony. What is harmony? Harmony is a relationship characterized by a lack of conflict, by agreement. So when you have harmony in your thoughts, there's no conflict in your thoughts. It's this natural flow that leads to joy, to enjoyment. So we have to learn to stop rebelling against circumstances that are against our views. Difficult circumstances can lead us to discover hidden powers in ourselves. Wow, that's very profound. Hidden powers within ourselves. Page 138 of The Might of Thoughts. I want to read a little something here, which I think will be very, very interesting. It says here, circumstances from which suffering grows in the human being are the product of the might of his or her thoughts and thereby also the product of his or her own mental disharmony, which is expressed through his thoughts and feelings. Consequently, the circumstances which the human being meets with grace, joy, and enjoyment are also the result of his or her own thoughts and feelings, and thereby the result of his or her own harmony. So the way to combat these negative thoughts and feelings, the way to combat negative circumstances in your life is by maintaining, nurturing, these positive, healthy thoughts, because good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings generate more good thoughts. Good feelings also generate good habits. And good habits create the good circumstances in your life. You actually are the forger of your own fortune. You create your own good luck. You are the master of your own destiny. You create good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, and good circumstances in your life. What you think, you make real. We think about yourself, you become. So we've got to get away from the lower thoughts and lower feelings and lower habits that we fall into. Accordingly, beautiful, good, and positive thoughts of every kind can form habits and circumstances as well as convictions and experiences worth living. Cheerfulness, moderateness, modesty, self-control. Constructive thoughts generate and strengthen the human being's calmness, love, peace, and effective courage, as well as his or her reliability and ability to make decisions. You'll generate a sense of order, cleanliness in your life, gentleness, feelings for others, and readiness to help, and so on and so forth. Thus, good, healthy thinking, positive thoughts harden into good circumstances and good convictions. So your thoughts, holding on to the good thoughts, hold on to the good thoughts, hold on to them very hard. Make those good thoughts a habit. And a habit is a settled or regular tendency or practice, one that is hard to give up. A habit is a routine of behavior. Have you ever woke up first thing in the morning and start to circulate negative thoughts? And then, you know, in 5 or 10 minutes, you've made yourself miserable. Well, you can take the information out of this book, The Mind of Thoughts, and rotate those thoughts and correct your bad thoughts. You know, the other kind of thoughts that are very helpful that I find are the thoughts related to love. Remember, love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love will forever be the purpose of our existence. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And love is part of what connects all of creation. And we all come up against the radiating love of creation. Creation radiates love. And we come up against that radiating love, and if we're sensitive, we will perceive it. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. Creation radiates love. It is a personality-less being. And it still radiates love. It has a gigantic, automatic radiation of love. Billy said as a young boy, he said, "I saw the light which the stars emitted, but I realized there was an invisible light called the love of creation." So as a young boy, he was picking up on these signals which were radiating out of creation. And creation has no personality. It's a Wesenheiten, as it's described in the German. It's not like a human being. It churns and goes on for trillions of years evolving. That's its whole purpose, is to evolve to a higher level. We as human beings, we have personalities. We can slack off. We can stop evolving for a while. We can take a rest for a couple thousand years or so and have personalities which come into material life that really don't do a whole lot and really don't make a whole lot of difference and don't evolve. But the creation doesn't do that. It's a juggernaut. It's like a giant, we don't even have a word for it. Other than Wesenheiten, it's never stopping on its evolution. It never rests until it actually goes into its rest phase. So for trillions of years, it's expanding. For like 155 trillion years, the universal consciousness evolves and it expands, and then it goes into its contraction phase, which lasts like 155 trillion years approximately. And then it goes dormant, and it does have a rest phase. But its evolutionary phase, I mean, we can't even imagine. I can't imagine a trillion years. I don't even know what that is like. I don't have the capacity even to wrap my mind around that. But the creation never stops evolving. And it's creating human spirits all the time to help it with its own evolution. And your happiness, and we all want happiness, right? Your sense of well-being comes from your evolution and your willingness to evolve. And that's why it's so important to fight the good fight against these lower feelings, lower habits, lower circumstances. What are these lower circumstances? Alcoholism, hate, affliction, resentment, sorrow, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and all these aspects of suffering. Because these negative thoughts, they can crystallize into confusing and exhausting habits. Let me tell you another way I recognized in my own life when I am being negative is you'll be exhausted because these negative thoughts produce exhausting habits and circumstances, and you'll be afflicted by them. What is a habit? It's a settled or regular tendency, a practice, one that's hard to give up. A habit is a routine of behavior that is repeated regularly and occurs unconsciously. Now, wouldn't it be great if unconsciously we could start the habit of good thoughts? Whether they could permeate into our unconscious. Maybe. Maybe they can. So when something crystallizes, it becomes definite and clear. When something starts to crystallize, if it's a good thought, it becomes free from confusion and ambiguity. And so these destructive thoughts can crystallize into negative circumstances. The positive, healthy thoughts can crystallize into positive circumstances. So these processes also that I'm talking about, they can occur unconsciously. And circumstances can arise and harden into failure. So consciousness determines its own health. Think about that. Consciousness determines its own health in an intelligent and rational form by means of the might of thoughts. It furthermore determines the health of the body or the decline of the body. So the body is a very plastic instrument. And it immediately reacts to the kind of thoughts that it tends and nurtures. Page 150. Let me jump to page 150 for just a minute. I know today's show is probably maybe not as fun as some of the other shows, but something for you to save your life with. So maybe a little more practical value. Let me read it. If the thoughts are strong, pure, neutral, positive, equalized, healthy, and happy, as well as free and of the loving form, then vitality and resistance against everything negative and destructive are built by means of their might. Protected, thereby, is also the body, which as a gentle and plastic instrument immediately reacts to the kinds of thoughts that the human being tends and nurtures. This is another reason why the human being should not allow habitual thinking to take the upper hand too much. Because in very many regards, this leads to extremely negative effects. One's thinking, therefore, should not be habitual, rather always constructive and thereby also renewing and progressive, so that the might of the thoughts is able to make real all which is useful and worth striving for the human being, for his consciousness and his psyche, as well as his or her life circumstances. You know, I just realized something by reading that probably that this show will profoundly impact someone that is struggling to maintain their own mental health. And I would even wonder if maybe to a certain degree we all are under that kind of struggle. Because I know in the beginning of this book, Might of Thoughts, it says that the earth humans are ill in their consciousness. So one of the most important things is correcting this illness that is in our consciousness. How do we do that? Well, by being confident, by being optimistic, by being relaxed, by being cheerful, by being enthusiastic, by being thankful, by persevering, by persisting, by enduring. So all I'm here to do is encourage you, because we must learn to encourage ourselves, because you are the master of your own destiny. You are the person that creates your own good luck. You have the power over all circumstances in your life. Your good thoughts, your good feelings, your good habits create the good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny. Do not allow your thought boat to drift. Like a captain steers his or her ship, steer your ship. Take responsibility. Steer your ship and have good thoughts, good feelings, and good emotions, because it's your ability to control your thoughts that determine your health, your happiness, your well-being, and your success in life. I hope this show's helped a little bit. It certainly helps me bringing this information to you. I appreciate your patience because there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world. And I think it's going to get continually even more crazy. But if each one of us creates our world around us through our own world of thoughts, we can slowly, step by step, build a better world for all of us. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We've been studying Might of the Thoughts, one of the wonderful books written by Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer. We'll come to you again tomorrow. Have a great day. I guess good morning. It's still morning. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.